I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
And joining us on the nightcap today, it is Thursday, April 9th, just to remind people, no matter when you're listening to it, it's good to kind of let people know when we're talking to them. And today we're talking with Golden Knights TV analyst for AT&T Sportsnet and former NHL netminder, Mike McKenna, close personal friend of the show. Hello, Mike. How are you?
Hi, very close personal friends. Very, with a couple of asterisks. It's very close.
Oh, wow.
Good. Been enjoying learning how to teach my first grade daughter school. So thankfully, I still remember a lot of the things from kindergarten and first grade. The counting by tens, I'm pretty good at that. Mm. My daughter's teaching me about social studies, though. So, yeah, it's been interesting, but we've also been pretty busy doing some content for Vegas and, just doing like Knights Report, recording via Zoom, and then keeping busy writing a couple articles. We'll have another one coming out soon on Max Pacioretty either later today or tomorrow. So, staying plenty busy while we're in this goofy world as we know it.
Yeah, and plenty productive. First of all, I want to ask, what is the Disney movie or Pixar film du jour right now? Because you have a first grade, and then you have a younger daughter as well, Mike. And we know how the young kids get when you find a film you really like. You get to see it about 37 times straight through over and over again. So what's been that film for you guys, at least this week?
Well, we just we rented Onward. It came out on demand, because nobody's going to theaters, right? So
correct.
They're putting movies out straight to digital right away. So we rented Onward, and
how'd that go?
Let's just say that my soon-to-be 7-year-old cried for about an hour afterwards and couldn't sleep.
Ending.
Yeah, I'm not going to give any spoilers, but the ending was tough. And we had to calm her down. And I don't know. I'm not sold on the way they finished it up, but it was cute for a lot of it. Kind of had a Weekend at Bernie's vibe to it with a character that was, well, not alive, but half alive. And
well,
so that was interesting.
Frozen's
always in rotation, and we're really, really excited. The whole family is about Trolls World Tour coming out. I believe that might even be tomorrow. So,
oh my goodness,
we all love the first Trolls movie, and now the new one coming out. They branch out into all these different genres, and one of them's going to be heavy metal, and that's right up my alley. So super
excited. Really. The first Trolls movie I did enjoy as well, and it's so much more than just the Can't Stop the Feeling song by Justin Timberlake. But what a cool creative idea to not just do a sequel, but then kind of go a little bit deeper into genres like and one like you're so passionate about, like you said, Mike, heavy metal. That's kind of your second or third love behind obviously your family and like in the sport of hockey and stuff like that. But do you think you're in better shape now chasing those kids around all day or around this time last year when the seasons were wrapping up or during those Calder Cup runs that you often still found yourself deep in those playoff runs?
It's funny. We find ourselves finding who's going to be the person to do things now with teaching the kids. And I can only imagine if I was still trying to play hockey and take care of this at the same time. It just gives you a new respect for everything, whether it's teachers, stay-at-home moms, whoever's taking care of kids, nannies, whatever.
For sure.
It's not easy. It is not easy. It is a full-time gig. But yeah, it's I'd rather be on the ice, you know. my passion obviously is playing hockey, and I love being around my kids, but it's truly work. And you really, like I say, you really gain a respect for, you know, just what teachers are doing with your kids, the everyday contact and the teaching and trying to be creative, you know, find fun ways to keep them engaged. It's not always easy, and it's fun when you see things click, but it can really be troublesome at times.
Oh, for sure. And just keeping it original. And like you said, keeping them engaged. And the kids, you know, they're already probably less than enthused to be spending this much time with mom and dad to begin with. So, like you said, the respect for the teachers are there, but then everybody's in this really weird situation, obviously. Do you think that kind of transition has been the toughest adjustment for you and your family to make since all this has kind of come down? Or are you struggling in other areas or at least struggling to kind of put things together and find a routine?
Well, you know, you said a word there that I think is kind of key to this, is that I'm not going to act like it's been bunnies and rainbows and cupcakes the whole time. It's been hard. And people are struggling, you know, and not just the financial aspect of everything that's come along with this coronavirus deal. It's just the everyday struggle with doing life differently than you had. You don't have your routines. You're getting more contact with your children than you're used to. You're refereeing two kids constantly who claim to be best friends but appear to be mortal enemies. There's been times where it's been really tough on us, 100%. But, you know, as it's gone on, as we've gotten into the routine, we found out what works, it's gotten much more peaceful, and we're learning when to keep the kids away from each other and what works. And but I think it's important for people to know out there, too, that, hey, if you are struggling with this, you are not alone. I mean, the strongest families out there, it's changed the dynamic for everybody, and we're all finding ways to go about it.
Right. We're not used to sharing this much time with anyone, let alone like me, where I'm alone completely besides me and my cat. And that has its definite pluses, but it definitely has its drawbacks as well. But yeah, it's definitely an interesting kind of psychoanalytic process, and it kind of reminds me about those inner team dynamics that you had. You know, when you would be playing and it'd be about mid-season, where the end of the season is still so far away, but you've already been doing it for a while, and everybody kind of gets on each other's nerves. And sometimes you just got to have one of those locker room talks where you air everything out and put everything out in the open. Or sometimes you just needed to take time away from the rink and get away from your teammates and just kind of have a change of scenery and change of audience around you.
Yeah, you know, we all have our little happy place, and it's not always at a hockey rink. And that's what separates a lot of us. Some of us just want to be there all the time. Other people have different interests, and kids are really scatterbrained. You can always find something for them. But once they get into something, they don't want to let it go. And that can be the hard part, is trying to convince them to do something different, to just get them away from what's currently on their mind. And for us, you nailed it on the head, like as a player, where, you know, those times in the season where you get to like January and early February, and you've been going for half a year, three quarters, two thirds of a year. And you're just thinking, let's just get the playoffs. Let's go. It's time. You know, we kind of know who's in, and let's get it going. And that's kind of what we're all fighting through, I think, right now, is we're just waiting for that step where we can go, all right, we're all going back to work. No matter what you do in life, whether it's us playing or talking about hockey, whether you're just looking to go back on the job with whatever it is, that's the hardest part. We just don't know right now, you know? And it's it's kind of tough to budget that out ahead, but you just try to find that happy medium and get things to try to flesh out that occasion where you're not getting too overwhelmed with everything. And it can be daunting, but, you know, I think we're all doing our best job we can.
For sure. The lack of tangible progress, just in terms of finding a date or at least a general timeline of when things are going to return to somewhat semi-normalcy, but that happy place, that calming, just kind of mental skill, that's something that's utilized a lot by us as goaltenders. And I wanted to ask you, Mike, because we all have that goalie island we go to if the game is going really well or if it's going really poorly. It's that groove spot. You're either reaching for it because you're uncomfortable, or you're you're living in it because you're grooving. How did you kind of calm yourself down once things got a little fast around you in the game and things got a little away from you? Like, how did you kind of decompress your mind and your emotions to get back to the task at hand and kind of settle your brain? Because if the brain's going too much, you know this as much as any hockey player, any goalie does. If you're thinking too much, you're already off track of your goal as a hockey player, but especially as a goalie.
Yep, and you've got to find a way to compartmentalize things. It would really kick in, and again, you know this too, being a fellow goaltender, but to explain to people that have never played the position, if you get one or two, really not one, but you get two goals in pretty rapid succession, if there's a third goal in pretty quick time, your mind can start spinning, absolutely
yeah.
spinning. And you start thinking about, what if we lose this game 7-0, you know? And the best way that I could do to get out of those funks where my mind would just start doing the hamster in the wheel was I would just tell myself, next save. Just make the next save. And I would always tell myself one save at a time. And the reason I did that, and it sounds so rudimentary, like it's the simplest mm-hmm. thing on earth, right? Like one save at a time. Well, of course, you dummy, just make one save at a time. Well, no, because we've been trained as goaltenders to constantly do these combination saves in practice. And, you know, you got to make the first save and then get over to make another save. And you start thinking about what's happening after what can potentially happen first. And the first mm-hmm. thing that's going to happen is you've got to get in front of the first puck. You can't be worried about your secondary positioning on the next one. So, you know, there were times where I was willing to sacrifice even, you know, a little bit of aggressiveness in terms of positioning or something just to make sure I was at least on angle and had a chance at the first save rather than trying to overdo it. Because when you start to press, when you start getting outside of your groove, like you said, like where you're over-aggressive or you're pushing too hard and trying too hard, mm-hmm. that's when the game gets fun. You want to make the game as simple as you can, and you just try to filter everything down to that next save, and you give yourself mental clues to do so.
Absolutely. That spiral to just make that next save. But like you said, Mike, before you make the first one, if you're already worried about that positioning, you're not going to make the first save, so the second save isn't even going to be there for you to make. There's no point. So you have to let the game and the situation come to you. And that's something I feel like you kind of, it's, I don't think it's a light bulb moment when you learn it, but it's something you're told over and over. And then someday it just kind of clicks or settles within you, or you just have one of those experiences to be like, oh yeah, that's what they were talking about, even though that's exactly what I already kind of knew. What was your earliest memory goaltending, Mike? I'm curious because we all kind of have that general story of how we got to the position, why we were drawn to it. Was it the pads? Was it some coach? But in terms of your in-play memory, I have one that sticks out to me in my first game playing goaltender, and it wasn't a good memory, I'll say that right now. But what was that for you, and how old were you, and just kind of walk us through that.
Oh, it's clear as day. I was probably 5 years old in my first year of organized hockey. And, you know, back then you'd rotate goaltenders. Everybody'd put the gear on, they'd play a game
sure.
or two. And I always wanted to be a goaltender. That was it. But thankfully my grandfather and my dad had the foresight to make me learn how to skate first. I had to play at least 2 years of, you know, general hockey before specializing
sure.
as a goaltender. And I'm very thankful that they did that because I learned to understand the game and not just being a goalie and standing there like people think you do. It got me to learn how to skate a little better. But my first time I was ever in the net was at Afton Ice Arena in St. Louis, Missouri. I can remember this clear as day. It was cross ice. And it went pretty well. And the funny part is that we actually have the tape of it. My grandpa had one of those camcorders
no
that looked like a wolf on his shoulder. Yeah, I mean, this thing, it was the size of a dresser, you know, like just huge. And I think he even had to have it on a tripod. It was so big. But he's filming, and I make a save, it means flop to the ice and keep it out of the
correct.
Net.
Correct, yes.
I make the save, and my grandpa, you can hear him on the thing say, "Oh no, we're never going to get him out of there. He's having
oh,
way
no.
too much." Yeah, and
it's not even about the video; it's about the commentary at that point that just made you. That's so spot
yep.
on, though.
It was bang on. It was 100% bang on, and you know, I'm like, I get emotional thinking about my grandpa because there were so many things that were like that and similar to it. And, you know, he lived until just before high school for me. So I guess 12, 13 years old, you know, now I'm almost 37, but just being with him for those first, you know, 12, 13 years of my life, there were so many of those moments, and he was always kind of in my back pocket, if you will, you know, when I was sure. playing, just thinking about like those childhood times that when things really just were fun, you know, and that's what all that mattered.
Absolutely. He imprinted on you. And then obviously that became your livelihood. Hockey's always going to be a part of your life. So he was part of the foundation. So it makes total sense why you would have so much admiration and affinity for him, even though, like you said, he passed away when you were still young. When you started playing, other than just like the flopping, which I really could only equate to, like, say you put a giraffe on skates and they're just realizing that their legs are really skinny. It's just the Bambi on ice effect kind of. I was always just like, I wanted to be in battle drills. I wanted to go out and just go out at the top of the crease and try to cover the puck and try to muscle through people. But it wasn't always the thing that I was necessarily best at. And a lot of times, you know, the stuff that we're not good at, whether it's as a goaltender or just an athlete in general, that stuff we don't gravitate towards to work on as much. So what was a type of drill or scenario that you kind of always struggled with? Or I don't want to say your soft spot as a goaltender, but we all have our dominant sides or dominant saves that we like to make or just are more developed than others. What was that for you that you struggled with?
Well, you know, there's a couple. It depends what time frame in my life and career for sure. But if we go back to the early years of it, it was a constant battle between myself and coaches that constantly were repeating to me, stand up, stand up, stand up. Mm. And remember, this is the late 80s, early 90s, where there was still that thought that stand-up goaltending was the way to do it.
Sure.
And I fought that. I fought it hard. I mean, I saw, and this is, Ed Belfour was one of the first really butterfly, and Patrick Waugh, and sure. I relate to guys who I saw a lot in the building going to Blues games, because my dad was an off-ice official. You know, that, and he was compensated with tickets, not money. So I was very, very fortunate.
Works for you, didn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And I'd go watch the opposing goalie in warmups, you know, so I'd watch Ed Belfour, Joseph. And so the butterflies coming in, but the coaches are still telling me to stand up. And I'm going, this doesn't make any sense, you know. And like even through 96, 97 peewee teams, they're starting other kids that could hardly stop anything, but because they stood up, they thought they were great.
Right.
And here I am, don't go down on every shot. What are you doing that for? Well, because players can't raise the puck. So that was a constant battle for me, just from that aspect. It wasn't that I wasn't necessarily good at it. I didn't agree with that philosophy. And then as I got older, though, I can tell this one's clear as day because it's near and dear. I'm drafted by the Nashville Predators, so I'm 19 years old. Being a college kid, that was the first year you could be drafted in my age group. Okay, that's changed mm-hmm. since. Now it's just 18 across the board. Used to be
back in the
college
day.
Yeah, I know. I'm dating myself. 2002 draft, and so I get drafted, and Mitch Korn is the goalie coach in Nashville. Legendary goalie coach. Worked in Buffalo with Dominic Hasek, Nashville, Braden Holtby in Washington. Now he's
absolutely.
With the Islanders. I mean, an absolutely legendary guy in terms of goalie coaching. Should be in the Hall of Fame, if you ask me. But Mitch grabs me, and he goes, Mike, you're a big man, but you can't skate. And first off, like, I'm 6'2", so back then in 2002, I was a big man, and now I'm, like, average at best, maybe a little undersized for a goalie. But he said, you can't skate, and I was like, what the hell do you mean? Like, I can skate, and I had no clue, because nobody had ever taught me how to be a powerful skater as a goalie. And we're not talking power skating around circles. In the crease. Power skating. And he was dead on. He was right, because he sent me to get a guy named Chris Economo, who is my goalie coach forever afterwards and one of my best friends now. And I showed up, and there were 10-year-olds skating circles around me.
Interesting.
Circles around me. But you know what? I took a lot of pride in it, and I think by really the midpoint of my career, skating had really become one of my strengths, and I was really proud of that because I had to work for it.
Right. And I want to ask you a little bit more specifically about that, because it's super interesting just based off of, like you said, when you came up and how goaltending was changing just as a style. But, you know, by the time we get to what, 15, 16, 17, you're pretty much foundationally set. Now you're tweaking. You can go to the specialist like you did, but it's a really tough putt to try to remake an aspect of your game, especially like skating. So for you at that point, you know what a T-push is. You know what a shuffle is. You know what leg to get up with correctly to be efficient in your movement, cross crease and whatever else. So what was the next level thinking of the skating improvement for you? Was it managing your weight better so you could power through and get across quicker and make sure that you're not getting out of control body wise? Was it edge work? Was it just management? What was missing from your game at that point?
Yeah, it's definitely the edge work and the power that came with it. But you know what, though? I'm kind of shooting you down on this a little bit. It wasn't until college that I taught myself the proper leg to recover with.
Really?
So we're talking about
me projecting the development I had right later on, because you played it at a different time than I did. So that's my mistake.
Correct. Like, I just watched... I'd love for you to see this. I just watched video from a game for me in Bantam AAA. And, man, I look like Craig Billington out there. Knees are off the ice, one-pad saves.
Sure.
It's shocking how much my game changed from 15 to 36 at the end of my career. Like, unbelievable to see how different it was. And even going back and looking at games from, like, 2007, 2009, you know,
right,
I'm doing regular VH on the post and paddle down, and
right,
it just changed. Everything did drastically. You know, that was the part, was like constantly changing. But to go back to the skating, though, I guess, too, it's worth saying that goalies now at 18 or 19 are pretty much technically set. They've learned everything since
right
they were 10.
But that's part of the timeline here too, Mike. Like you said, it's professionalized now, so that we know which legs are the most efficient. We teach that at age 5 versus you figuring it out at 19.
Right, because I didn't have a mm-hmm. goalie coach at all. Mm-hmm. I never had an in-season goalie coach until I was probably 30 years old. Okay,
that's
full-time
crazy
guy. Exactly, you know, and you're supposed to develop goaltenders in your most important position on the ice, and you don't even get any coaching. Figure that one out, you know?
I know, right?
But regardless of all that, like, I found, and what I was taught was that I was really just doing a lot of backward skating and flowing around rather than doing C-cuts with hard stops, hard pushes, using my edges to really be under control and be powerful. So what I was doing was essentially just, I was just lazily going about my business is what it came down
right
to. You know, I was kind of drifting into things, and I wasn't very precise. And like, as I got older and started to teach things, those were some of the key words I would say was don't drift, you know,
right,
and
don't wiggle your butt when you're trying to play that angle as the play is coming towards you. When you step out at the top of the crease, you don't want to do that. You want to stop on that
right
edge, snap that
yep
leg right
and
back below you, so you can move into your next save without any inhibition from the previous move you just used.
Yeah, and kind of, you know, with me, I go back to my childhood in racing too, and think of racing terms, and it was always it was hit your marks. You know, it's a racing term for whether it's pit stops or turn in for an apex or anything, but it's the same with goaltending. Hit your mark. Know where you want to be at the top of the crease. Push as hard as you can to get there and get stopped and get ready.
Right.
And it made my game efficient, and it cleaned it up because I was beating passes, I was waiting on shots, and it just ultimately let me be much more patient in the net.
And that's the aspect of timing, I think, that people don't talk about a lot with goaltending, because I always say, when we talk about prospects or when guys are coming in the league, because historically, you know, to have guys like Marc-Andre Fleury playing at the NHL level or Carey Price when they're 18, 19 years old, or what we're seeing, you know, in Philadelphia right now where you spent some time, that's rare. Usually it's mid-20s, because when guys are still growing, because it takes them a lot, they're continuing to grow into their 20s, all those hitting of the marks are not just dependent of the speed of the game, but how your body is configured and how you feel in your own skin. So as you're putting weight on, as you're stretching out more, those marks, that timing is changing almost day to day sometimes. So that's, I just wanted to kind of bring that up and illustrate that for people, because I feel like we just assume, well, they just need more time to get up to the speed of the shots. No, they've been, you guys face pretty hard shots as you come up through the levels. Like, there's always one guy, regardless. Like, everybody works on their shot. That's not what makes NHL players great and differentiates them from the others. It's everything else. But it's about being comfortable in your skin and how you move as a goalie. And it's not going to be it's not going to be just like everybody else's, like you were when you were growing up. And there's stand up. Well, that's not how my body's built or the style that I play. So that's not going to work. Interesting.
Yeah, and it wasn't working anyway back then. They just, these coaches refused to believe it. But, you know, I always liken it, and I try to get people to, in their heads, go about things that they can understand it easier. And I always tell people, hey, what were you like physically at 18 years old when you went to college versus 22 when you left college?
Right.
And I'm not even talking about athletes. I'm not even talking about athletes. I just mean the general public here. Mm-hmm. You know, aside from people that maybe hit the frozen yogurt bar hard, but I mean, like, think about how much your body grows and matures and changes.
Right.
That's what you face with NHL athletes and goaltenders, especially, that you're still growing into your own skin. And, you know, it used to be 24, 25 is when you were expecting goalies to mature and get to the NHL, but that has been accelerated too. I mean, now you're looking at, if this guy plays 2 years in the American Hockey League and doesn't make the NHL by the third year, they're considering the guy a bust. And that's just like, that's hard to believe because the patience isn't there. They're looking for phenom kids to come in and take care of business and be out of the league by 30 years old. You know, it's just, it's changed so drastically. And it's really why Marc-Andre Fleury is so amazing, that he just keeps going. And he started playing the NHL at 18, you know?
Right, I mean, an outlier.
Unbelievable. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, no, but and at least, like, it's understandable how that kind of mentality is stirred to mirror what they've done with forwards now, because we see more and more guys coming straight out of the draft or straight out of the O or college or whatever, and playing at 18, 19. There's so much youth in this league, and so it's only natural that it's going to eventually trickle down to the goalie side. And as we said earlier in our talk here, Mike, these kids are getting training that you and I didn't have access to until you were a professional, until I was in college. And they're getting this at such a young age. And so they're prepared for it. But at the end of the day, if your body's still growing, you can have all the training in the world. You still got to figure this out. You still have to put all the puzzle pieces together. The puzzle's not going to finish itself.
Yeah. And what's made it hard, too, is that it's kind of this dual-edged sword where, you know, you don't want to tell a kid that he has to go and get private training in the 10-year-old or else he doesn't have a chance of making the NHL. But
right.
It's kind of true. And that's not
It
cool.
is for the goalie position.
And that's the way the U.S. and Canada is. You have to go out and obtain your own private coaching to even have a chance versus Europe, where it's institutionalized, where the youth hockey system has the goalie coaches built into it. So that's what you face. It's different here. It's very capitalistic in terms of that. But it's a different way. And too, like, part of it is that, you know, now you've got kids that have been butterflying since they were 8 or 9 years old, and these boys and girls are having hip surgeries at 20.
Oh, the injuries. You know? It's awful.
Right. So,
it's crazy.
The stress it puts on their hips. You know, 1 in 4 people have a square peg and a round hole in their hip, and if you play goalie, you're going to need surgery. It's not what we do as goalies is not natural. You know, it's not what the body's built to do.
No. And as you said, some of us are built in a somewhat counterintuitive way. I'm one of those people that has a misshapen top of my femur with my hips. I'm going to have to get them shaved down and refitted one of these days. But that's the thing. It's just this constant abuse. And when you have that specialized training, when you have those technical movements, or if you're a little bit too, you know, detail specific at certain young ages, that can work against you just as much as not getting any training at all. That's why it's such a luck thing. It's personality. And that just speaks to how tough it is just to make it in hockey. You can't just show up and do the training. There's so much more that goes into it and whether or not you're going to be successful. You mentioned Marc-Andre Fleury. I don't want to go. I could talk about your and my career the whole time, but we got to have some Golden Knights talk here, a little bit more specific. But I just wanted to get your thoughts because we are dealing with a really weird situation. We're not sure when the season's going to come back, if it's coming back at all. But as goalies, we've done a relatively good deep dive here already. In terms of staying ready and staying in shape, you know, these guys don't have access to the rink. Everybody's kind of making it up what they have at home. But in terms of what the Golden Knights have in their goalie stable with Marc-Andre Fleury and Robin Leonard right now, how do you think they're approaching the, not just the physical side, but the mental side and making sure that they're keeping that edge? Because there has to be so much more work that goes into just maintaining, you know, your level zero right now, because there's just so much change.
Well, I don't envy it at all. I mean, I had one or two summers where, you know, I didn't pick the gear up until really late in the summer, and it was fine. It was a couple weeks before training camp, like, you know, 3 weeks before, and then maybe 2 weeks ahead, I started to get serious about it. And that was never really a problem for me, but I can tell you what it did mentally is it made me nervous every time. It made me nervous that I wasn't going to be ready and my body was going to somehow forget. And it always took me a couple weeks to get my tracking back. You know, my muscle memory in terms of how to actually do things was always there. So for Marc-Andre, for Robin Leonard, the mechanics of playing goaltender, it's not going to go anywhere. What's going to be the struggle for them and for every goalie across the league is the tracking of the puck, you know, and fighting through screens and gameplay. You can't replicate it. You can't replicate tracking the puck. We've all seen Jim Craig catch tennis balls off a wall, off the floor. It's not the same as a puck being shot off a stick. It's just not.
Right.
And you know, you can do everything you can. You can. How many goalies do you see that juggle? Juggling doesn't do anything for a goalie.
No,
juggling,
it's a fun party trick, though.
It might get you a couple of drinks at the bar, you know, or something. Like, it is the party trick. Like, juggling means you're a good juggler,
right?
And yes, it may be able to help you with your hand eye a little bit, but what you really miss is seeing pucks coming at you, and that's
right.
What's hard about it. Their cardio, I don't have as much concern with that. I mean, Marc-Andre is in fantastic shape. Robin Leonard's been able to come into camps and be good right at the start of seasons too. So yeah. I wouldn't be as concerned about that. I think they can battle through the cardio aspect of it pretty easily. But the tracking, that's really what is tough to do, and really why at the start of the season, when things are chaotic, when systems aren't in place, when there's turnover in team personnel, some goalies are better than others at the start of seasons, but what really makes me excited is that Marc-Andre Fleury started this season absolutely on fire, and because he's such a read goalie and rhythm goalie like that, I think it plays into his favor myself, much more than some guys who really have to spend a month and a half before they feel comfortable. But man, I don't envy the task at all. It's not going to be easy when it comes time to play hockey again.
Right. And I remember even some of the drills that I would do when I was getting goalie training when I was younger, later in my career. I remember they would have like coat racks that they would put on wheels, and they would hang goalie equipment and put it in front of you. And so you would be fighting through traffic. But that's as close. Even when you do that and you have the screen, you have a really good shooter, the mentality isn't there. The stress of the game isn't there. The mindset is, you can't recreate it. And you're absolutely right. And I think, and I agree with you on Marc-Andre Fleury's kind of patchwork goaltending style, where he relies a lot on athleticism, which favors, you know, kind of the gong show type of hockey mentality, but that favors certain types of teams too. You know, like you talked about Marc-Andre Fleury getting off to such a good start. Remember what the Edmonton Oilers were doing at the beginning of this year when everybody was still figuring things out? Like, that's the thing, is that there are so many different outcomes and simulations, not for this, not just for the league, but specifically that the Knights or each individual player, that is just so up in the air because so much is up in the air. So I want to ask you, do you think that we're going to get back? We're going to see some wrap up of this season. Are we going to see some playoff hockey eventually? Or is this just a question we need to stop asking at this point and just say, well, we'll figure it out when we know more information, whenever that comes down?
That seems like the best way, because we're all in the same boat with this. You know, how can we, none of us are, is pathologist the right word, or epidemiologist or somethingologist? Like,
sounds right.
We don't know when this is going to end, period.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll tell you what, everybody wants to see hockey again. And I think that we can all hang our hats on the NHL trying to do everything they can to get this season finished one way or another, in the safest way possible, you know. And we talked about this in the Knights report the other day when we recorded it, that it almost seemed unfathomable at the beginning of all this to play hockey in empty arenas. And now we're at the point where that almost seems like a foregone conclusion in some ways, which,
right.
Hey, I mean, I think we'd all love to see it back so you could have fans in the building. That's what players want. That's what the owners want. That's what everyone wants. But what we really need is to have that Stanley Cup presented, and at least in a way that, like, somebody's going to be mad about whatever the system is for playoffs.
Sure.
If, you know, period. Like, fair is cotton candy. That's what you get at the fair. But, mm-hmm. you know, we got to see the cup presented, if at all possible. And, you know, no matter what, people are going to be starved for it. And I hope it happens. And the way you put it is really right. I mean, it's almost not even worth talking about will we or won't we. It's only worth talking about, hey, what maybe scenarios, and let's throw some spaghetti at the wall and see what sticks. And, you know, maybe somebody can have bragging rights on coming up with the way that the NHL decides on someday. But I sure hope the season finishes, especially for Golden Knights fans, because the team was really hitting its stride and mm-hmm. had a great chance to win the Stanley Cup, I think, as good as anybody in the league. And it's really excited to be part of it.
Yeah, absolutely. And it would be not just because we wouldn't see hockey. That would obviously be a really weird thing and a really unfortunate thing. But just think of all the other implications that it would have just saying, well, this season's done. Well, what about all the like, take the Golden Knights, for example. They went out and traded for Robin Leonard, and he's going to be a free agent after whenever this season is done. That was going to happen before all this came down or otherwise. How are we going to deal with that? I assume they would become a free agent if they decide to just go on to the next season and everything would continue as it goes. But then you have teams that have made decisions that affected and impacted their future that they didn't get a return on. There's so much that you can kind of gleam into and get into with that stuff. But regardless, I share with you, I just want hockey back. I enjoyed a few days of the break. But now I'm just kind of like, all right, I would like to see people. I would like to go to the rink. I just want some sense of normalcy. And it's definitely something that I didn't think I was going to miss as quickly as I did.
Yeah, well, your socials are showing that your cats are having a great time. You may be a little bit stir crazy, but your cat's having a blast having you around all the time.
This is true. Yeah, her hand-eye coordination training is going super well, super well.
right. Yeah, well, we're all in the same boat. We want to see hockey again. And you know, talk about return on players and trades that are made in futures. You know, yesterday I was reading a question and answer with Mario Andretti, of all people, and he said that everything in life is manageable. Mm. And that just, like, really struck a chord with me as this super simplistic statement that, you know, even if you're dealt a bad hand, you can still manage it better than somebody else who's dealt a bad hand, you know?
For sure.
So, you know, and you look at those examples of teams who, like, look at the Islanders. They lose Tavares. Everybody thinks they're dead in the water.
Right.
And,
great,
you know,
point.
And they're a great team the next year. So, I just think that no matter what, you can find a way. And really what it comes down to is the guys in the locker room, the belief they have in the coaching staff, and the belief that the management has in every player. And mm-hmm. all we've seen from the Golden Knights is everybody on the same page this year.
Yeah, for sure. It's going to be weird either way. And there's an asterisk above all these seasons anyway. So let's just hope there's something that can be salvaged from all this. Well, I don't want to take up too much of your time because I know you got your two young girls. You might have to get Frozen on again and you got to make sure the pillow forts aren't getting too out of hand. But I wanted to thank you, Mike, for taking some time to hang with us today and chat with us. And as you said, you're still doing work with the Knights. Where can we find all that? What's your social platform? All of that good stuff.
Yep. So everything with, you know, at Golden Knights, myself and my personal, at Mike McKenna 56, whether it's Instagram, Twitter. But yeah, if you keep your eye on all the Vegas socials, we've been doing stuff there consistently. So whether it's web-based, whether it's the YouTube channel, among other things, staying plenty busy. And yeah, I think we might have gym class downstairs with a little hockey with the girls today. So I'm looking forward to that.
Absolutely. Well, thanks again, Mike. Stay well, and hopefully we see you down here in the Vegas area very soon here.
Absolutely. Thanks, Lindsay. Anytime.
Thanks, Mike. And that'll do us for us here, at least this week on the Nightcap. We're hoping to push out at least one good juicy podcast a week as we're going through whatever time period this is, whatever we call this phase of life, the COVID-19 life, that is what we are living. But make sure you check out that and download that radio.com app on the Apple podcast. Subscribe, rate, send compliments, send concerns, all of those things. We want to make sure that we are keeping you guys entertained, especially in the hockey sense, through this really tough time. This has been the Nightcap on CBS Sports Radio 1140. Good enough.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.